Good morning. So we're going to play a little game this morning to start out. It's called, Are You Smarter Than a Kindergartner? This comes from, at least legend says, sometimes I see these things on the internet and I'm not sure how absolutely true they are. But it comes from Paul Harvey. Now for you younger folks, you're thinking Steve Harvey, different guy. Paul Harvey goes back a little further on the radio. But Paul Harvey had a riddle. And when done with, at least the way the story goes, when done with kindergartners, 80% of them would get the answer quickly. But only 17% of Stanford University seniors could get it correct. So let's see if you can be smarter than a kindergartner. All right, what is greater than God, more evil than the devil? The poor have it, the rich need it. If you eat it, you'll die, and when you die, you can't take it with you. Got an answer? Any thoughts in your head? Well, the answer is nothing. Nothing is greater than God. Nothing's more evil than the devil. The poor have nothing. The rich need nothing. If you eat nothing, you will die. And when you die, can't take nothing with you. Now, I'm not sure how theologically accurate everything there is, because I think the rich need a few things. We're going to talk about that today. But when it comes to the area of money, and understanding money, sometimes we laugh at children, but I believe that they tend to understand it more than we realize. There's the old test where you would put, a candy bar in front of a child or a $100 bill, and they pick the candy bar almost every time because you can eat a candy bar. $100 bill doesn't taste very good. And for us, we're like, well, they just don't understand value, and they don't understand the value of that $100 bill. But sometimes I think we put too much value in the physical paper, in the numbers in our bank account. And we miss what God is doing with wealth. And this is a, I believe, revolutionary passage. As we finish up 1 Timothy, we're going to continue into 2 Timothy and Titus and finish off the pastoral epistles. But as we finish this, Paul has already addressed Timothy on the issue of money. He reminds Timothy that money is the root of all kinds of evil. Not the root of all evil. I was at Papa John's the other week and I saw their tip jar. It says, money is the root of all evil. Come unburden yourself. Put it in the tip jar and you don't have to worry about it anymore. But again, no, it's not the root of all evil. It's not, I wish it was that easy. We could just get rid of money and then we get rid of all evil. It's not that easy. But it's the root of many types of evil. And a lot of people get themselves in trouble because of money, because of a lust for money, a desire to be rich. And when we want to be rich, we talked about this. What the translation for that is, God, I don't want to need you anymore. Because that's what it means to be wealthy. If I have so much wealth that I don't have to rely on God tomorrow or the next day, it's why God didn't give a month or a week's or a year's worth of manna in the wilderness to the Israelites. He gave them one day at a time because he wanted this relationship to be one of trust day by day. Not just, hey, I'm going to check in for my 10-year plan. And Paul continues to share with Timothy an instruction, a lesson on wealth. And the word wealth is used in three different, very different ways in this passage. And I think our understanding of that is key to our understanding of our relationship with stuff. We're going to begin with a warning to the rich, and just to clue you all in, that includes all of us. Because in Paul and Timothy's day, to be rich meant that you had a full belly and you had a place to stay. There were many who didn't, especially the full belly part. Starvation was a problem. People would be hungry. They would be dangerously underweight. And we live in a society where it's easy to be overweight. If you have enough to eat, if you are overweight, then you are wealthy by the standards that Paul is talking about. If we even compare ourselves to the rest of the world today, well, we may not be in the top 1% of wealth in the United States. We're in the top few percent of wealth in the world. There are so many parts of the world that live on less than a dollar a day. There are so many parts of the world that are hungry. And I fear with the way the world is going right now, there will be many more hungry people in the years ahead. We have to acknowledge that when God is speaking to the wealthy, He's talking to us. Even though we may feel like we live paycheck to paycheck and we may not feel wealthy. We are. He said, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. As we break that down, the first thing we have to look at is the quote, rich in this present world. It's a very interesting distinction. Because it means, if we're calling that to attention, that it's very possible to be rich in this present world and not rich in the next. God is making it clear that we can be very rich and wealthy now, but again, be very poor later in eternity. And considering how short this life is, I would hate to be very wealthy today only to be poor forever. That's possible. That's what Paul is drawing our attention to here. I remember when I was in school, there were certain times that privileges were granted in order by alphabetical order. And being a Yates, that wasn't always great for me. And it was funny because there were times that they got to pick the recess game we played or they got to do whatever. And the A's would be so arrogant in that. It was like this was their God-given right to choose first, to be first in line. Remember the first time I had a teacher that after the A's were getting very, very arrogant in their privilege, said, okay, now we're going to flip it. We're going to go reverse alphabetical order. It's funny for us to feel arrogant in the wealth that we have because it's so temporary. And at any point it could be flipped. That's why Jesus said, the first will be last and the last will be first in my kingdom. So it begs the question, does God hate wealthy people? Because there are those who would preach that. Is God angry with those who have money? And the answer to that is no. But wealth isn't necessarily the blessing we think it is. Wealth presents its own set of challenges. And God entrusts wealth to us not to end in our bank account, but for us to use it to bless others and to do good deeds. So, what is the purpose of wealth? In the short term, for us, God even allows us to have some benefit from it. He says, do not put your hope. And again, I love the proverb, hope deferred makes the heart sick. If you hope in the wrong things, at the end of that, our hearts will be sick. We'll be heartbroken. So don't put your hope in wealth, which is so temporary, and definitely don't become arrogant in it. And it's easy for us to do that. I know this can get political, and I'm not trying to do that because I'm probably more on the side of those who would say, I built that business, I worked hard. But even in my own business, I have to acknowledge that a lot of this came at God's hand. at his blessing, at gifts, and there was timing, not luck, but blessing. There were so many things that came together that were outside of my control that brought my success where I've had success. And while it's hard for me to hear somebody in the outside, especially that wants to maybe tax or take away some of that, say, look, you didn't do that. At the same time, I think I, in that position, have to acknowledge to God, God, you did this. It's your house. It's your car. It's your business. They're your kids. The Bible gives us this picture of stewardship. I'm taking care of it. But it all belongs to him. Because even the very breath in my lungs is his. So remind those who are rich, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant or to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who, again, the word rich comes here, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. And the words rich here couldn't be used more differently. Saying, remind those, command those who have a lot of stuff. So rich there means they've accumulated enough, more stuff than they need. Remind them not to put their hope in that pile of stuff, because that stuff could be eaten away quickly. I was watching, trying to learn how to store food for the future because I have a big family and it could be useful. Got a big deep freeze full of meat, but it was interesting to me, and I think God made a point that shortly after I filled my freezer with meat last year, we had this thing called a derecho, and I didn't have power for a week. Posed some interesting challenges, and thankfully, we saved it. But oh my God, I can't put my hope in the stockpile of food I have. And I was watching this video on how to save rice and flour and buckets. And at the end of the video, I thought it was interesting, and I decided I was going to watch somebody else's videos because they went back a few years later and they opened their buckets and it was filled with bugs and weevils and other things. So they clearly didn't do it right. But if we put our hope and our faith in those things, that pile of stuff that we use to prepare for tomorrow, it can all be gone. Jesus said that the moth and the rust, they destroy it. But put your hope in God who richly provides. God doesn't provide us with just the bare bones. He provides us richly. And I think of rich kind of like when I look at the word rich on a packet of really nice hot cocoa. You've got the really watery stuff. We've had that before, right? It's what they have at the hospital. But then there's the really rich stuff. That you take a few sips and you feel like you might be getting diabetes. I mean, it's just so chocolatey. That's how God provides for us when we put our hope and our faith in Him. It's not in this pile of stuff, but it's a direct connection to the Father who provides us with good things. We can eat a nice meal. In fact, when Beth and I were first married, because their family raised cattle, they didn't like steaks, and they really didn't like T-bone steaks. So we were in a place where we were in youth ministry, and we didn't have a lot of money. We could barely afford hot dogs, but we're eating T-bone steaks. Because God richly provides. It wasn't about being arrogant, and it wasn't about being putting hope in how much we had. It's enjoying the good things that God has given us. He richly provides us with everything. And this is another one I think would surprise us because we just heard about how wealth was bad, right? Who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. It's okay to enjoy life. And it's okay to enjoy the blessings that God's given us. If we've got a beautiful view where we live, we can enjoy the beautiful view. Doesn't make us bad people. But don't get arrogant in it. Don't put your faith in it. day to day, have your faith in the God who richly provides us. It's everything we need. Then he gives us a challenge to the wealthy. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age. Again, we have the word rich, but it's used very differently. He calls some rich who have possessions. He talks about how he richly or generously provides for our enjoyment. And now he is telling us who are wealthy, who have a full belly and a roof over our head, to be rich, to be flush with, to be overflowing in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation in the coming age. I've been to too many estate sales, and I've seen too many dollar boxes, expensive little kitchen gadgets, of knickknacks of all sorts. You see a life's accumulation going a dollar or a couple of dollars at a time. I have never, ever met with a family after an estate sale that they felt good about. And if you have one, tell me the story. I'd love to hear it. But I have met with family after family who had a death in the family, and now it's time for the auction or the estate sale to happen. And they feel like this is all very valuable because, again, it's the accumulation of a life's possessions. And it goes for pennies on the dollar of what they feel like it's worth. Can't take it with us. But what we can do is we can convert those resources and we can use them to fund our good deeds and our sharing and generosity to others. And in doing so, we get the secret to wealth in God's kingdom. Divine economics. We become a conduit of blessing. God uses us to meet needs because he can trust that when he tells us and shows us where to go, that we will be faithful and we will do what he wants us to do. We'll go where he wants us to go. And I'm going to tell you, it's a lot of fun. There's something funny about dollar bills. They only can bring any satisfaction when we part with them. But when God uses them in us to bless and encourage and build up others, while we also enjoy what he's richly provided, good things happen. God wants us to be faithful stewards. He wants us to make good decisions. And what that means is that when we accumulate wealth and we start to make good decisions, when we have a good business acumen, the Pareto principle, or what we see in the story of the talents, whom God has given much to, much more will be given. It naturally happens. But there's a problem there, because if we just continue to become more and more wealthy and pile up more and more wealth, then we don't need God tomorrow. And I have seen too many people pile up too many resources and do that very thing. Turn their back on God and say, well, guess I don't need him anymore. And they slap the hand that so richly provided. No, but if we are generous, if we are a conduit of blessing and we continually lay up that treasure in heaven by doing good deeds, by generously sharing with those in need, by investing it, maybe not so much in financial instruments, but by investing it in each other, in our community. When we do that, we still need God tomorrow. The pile doesn't get too big. And we get to be a part of what God is doing. So we're laying up treasure in heaven. And this treasure isn't a pile that we're not going to be like Scrooge McDuck with a giant money palace of treasure in heaven because we did good deeds. No, this treasure, from the best of my understanding, will look like crowns that we will get to lay at the feet of Jesus. This treasure will be people in heaven that will come to us and say, "Can I share?" That may have only been a momentary encounter for you. That may have been a gift that you forgot even giving. But can I tell you what that meant for me as it led me into God's kingdom? What a blessing in heaven to be able to have those encounters, to be able to meet those people that we don't even know how we impacted, what that gift accomplished. Again, becoming a conduit of blessing and still trusting God for tomorrow. And finally, there's an encouragement given to us all in 1 Timothy. We'll read the second half of verse 19. And we do this, we lay up that treasure in heaven so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. In Luke chapter 10, verse 4. Well, I don't want to go there yet. Matthew 19. Jesus meets with the rich young ruler. Now behold, one came and said to him, "Good teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life?" And again, here, eternal life, it's not just life in heaven, but it's life of the kingdom. It's that living water. So he said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but the one that is, God. But if you want to enter into life, keep the commandments." He said, "Which ones?" And Jesus said, "You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself." The young man said to him, "All of these things I have kept from my youth. What do I still lack?" And he knew he was lacking something. Jesus said to him, "If you want to be perfected, go sell all that you have and give it to the poor. And then you will have treasure in heaven. Come, follow me." When the young man heard the saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Familiar with a monkey trap? I don't know if this works on all monkeys, but it works on some. That if they want to trap a monkey, they'll take a gourd or other some type of large container with a small opening. It can be a clay pot. And they'll put in that container something that doesn't fit back through the hole very well at all. A large banana or something else that the monkey wants. And the monkey will become trapped because they will put their hand in their paw and they will grab that banana and it won't come back through. But for some reason, their greedy little paws can't let it go. And they will be there stuck, holding on to this thing, not able to let go until they are trapped. Until the owner of the trap comes back. If we're not careful, possessions are like that monkey trap for us. We pick up on that gold bar, and we can't move it. We can't pull it through. But we're just so terrified to let it go. And what Jesus is saying to this rich young ruler isn't that your possessions are bad. It's that you put your faith in them. And you need to put your faith in me. Jesus said, there isn't room for two rulers in your heart. And it's the same reason in Luke chapter 10. When Jesus sends out the 72, he'd already sent out his disciples. Now he's sending out a bigger group. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others, and he sent them two by two ahead of them, to every town and place where he was about to go. And he told them, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send workers into the harvest field. Go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves. Do not take a purse or bag or sandals. Do not greet anyone on the road. Modern translation. Don't bring a phone. Don't bring a wallet. Leave your American Express at home. You know, if I have a credit card in my wallet, there's not a lot I can't solve. And we lived through some of it. We had a car breakdown on the way to the airport. Just about 10 miles from the airport as we were flying out really early in the morning in the rain. And we figured it out. But a lot of it had to do with the fact that I had a cell phone and a credit card. Hopefully we'll find the van. Still don't know exactly where it is. Had it towed and the phone number didn't work, but I did get a hold of them. Just don't know exactly where it is. But Jesus is saying, I don't want you to have faith in your pocketbook. I don't want you to have faith in what you have. Don't go and meet up with other people you already know, but I want you to go and just rely on me. And as we do that, God does amazing and powerful things. But for us to be able to grab hold, and I think this picture of grabbing hold, it's been used multiple times here by Paul to Timothy. We need to take hold of the eternal life. But to do that, we've got to get out of the monkey trap and we have to let go of the wealth. We have to let go of the stuff. We have to grab on to the life that is truly life. And say, God, I trust you. God, I trust you. This wealth is fleeting. It's not bad. I'll enjoy it as I have it. I'll enjoy those rich, chocolatey moments when they come. But I'm trusting you. And I will be generous because it's not my money, it's your money. And I will use it to do good deeds, to lay up treasure in heaven because it's not my money, it's your money. And one of the biggest reasons I hear people say, well, Pastor, I can't do that good deed. I can't be generous. And I'm not asking you for your money. But when God leads you to be generous, I want you to walk into that. And one of the biggest hindrances or hurdles to that I hear is, well, I have to be ready for tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now, and I've got to be prepared. Well, I do know that God will still be on the throne in 10 years, in 20 years. Even after he comes back and recreates heaven and earth, God will still be God. And we can trust him. So money isn't bad. Sure, it can be the root of all kinds of evil. But he richly provides so that we can enjoy what we've been given and we can use the rest beyond what we need today to be a blessing, a conduit of blessing to others. Let's continue in worship.